goods, like, you know, a chicken or a turkey, like, you know, Thanksgiving, we're given monetary reparations in trade for our efforts. So if we, you know, work, that's what we get in exchange. But we also visited the particular principles of what for all areas that we're going to be exploring this year, which is money, sex, and power, each of which have a lot of control and influence in our lives. So what do we do with it? And I think it's important for us as believers to understand what the ethics of the kingdom are, what the principles are, so we may learn not only to apply it, but in doing so, bring the kingdom into our world for our friends, our co-workers, and our families. So let me begin by simply asking a question. And that is, why do we tell our children to go to school? Some of you might still be in school. But why do we go to school? And then, why do we go to college or university or technical school? Why do we pursue further education, even in the trades? Why would we do that? So you don't necessarily have to go to university, although in certain cultures that is like the must do. But it's not the only thing. Why do we apprentice to enter even the trades? Well, we know the answer to that. We go to school so we get good marks, hopefully. And we get good marks, we're told to get good marks in a lot of our culture, so that we can go to good school. And we go to good schools because we want to get a good job. The question then is, why do we want a good job? Well, it gives you good money. Right? That's what we're told. This is the ladder we climb. And then the question becomes, well, why do we want good money? Well, because it provides stability. It provides us with things like a car, a spouse, and a house. It's supposed to make us happy, successful. But is this what it's really for? Is this why God calls us to be educated, to be working, to make money, or to be creative? Is this what He wants for us? And these are the questions we want to be asking. It's not necessarily as simple as saying it's right or wrong. And I want you to hear that. The question sometimes is more about whether we've thought about the track we're on or not. Some people call it the rat race and bail out on it, and therefore do something else with their life, sometimes a lot less productive, sometimes more. But what are you doing? It is an existential question, and not so easy to answer sometimes. So what I'm going to do is, this is some of the questions that, whoops, what was that? There you go. Some of the questions that you have asked, or a congregation has asked. And like I said, continue to ask, either by calling us, or by sending it to us by email, or placing it into the offering box here, and it'll get to Diana and myself, and we'll be dealing with each of these subjects and topics. But here are the questions that have been asked about work and vocation. What should my perspective be on vocation? That's a very foundational question. How do I discern my work and vocation? How do I tell what my work and my vocation are? How do I fulfill, fight, and hope for my vocation / work without completely identifying myself through the position, title, or performance I have? So being enmeshed with your work or vocation. What ways are wrong to make money? Passive income. Is that okay? I had to look this up, what passive income is. And when does looking for tax savings cross the line and become tax evasion? Some really nitty-gritty questions in there, so we're going to look towards answering some of them. But we're going to look at some definitions, and I looked up the definitions for work, and honestly, if you look up the definitions, there's 44 different entries for work. I have an idea of what you might understand work to be. Work can be a verb, you know, the stuff that you do. Work can be a noun, in terms of an artist creates a work, or you have a body of work. You know, so work can go, and there's a whole bunch of slangs as well. We talk about working things out, and there's a lot of, you know, idioms that engage the word work. So I decided to look over vocation. It has four definitions, a little more manageable than work, but I'm assuming that you have certain ideas about what work are. But let me talk about vocation a little bit. It is understood usually as a noun, and the first is a participation in an occupation, business, or profession. It's a calling. A second definition is a strong inclination to follow a particular activity or career. So it's not just tied to occupation, business, and profession. There is a third understanding of vocation, and that is a divine call to a religious life. And what they mean specifically with a religious life is that it is understood that, for example, in the Catholic Church, the priesthood is a vocation. Or becoming a monk, or a nun, or joining a holy order is a particular form of vocation. Number four, a function or station, a step, especially in religious life, to which one is called by God. So that one is tied to the third one, or the one that I just explained. And these are the, where it comes from. It comes from simply the word call. So if the word vocation you find a little bit hoity-toity, feel free to understand it simply as the call. But whose call becomes what we ask about. Who is calling you? Is it the call of the world? Is it the call of your family? Or is it the call of God? So in all these four cases, we are talking about calling. Now, I'd like to look at some of the principles. And there's two verses. This was actually the verse that we read last Sunday, but because we never got to it, we dealt with two other verses. But let's read this together. I'll read it for you, just to remind you. Then God said, "Let us make mankind in our image, in our likeness, so that they may rule over the fish of the sea, the birds in the sky, over the livestock and all the wild animals, and over all the creatures that move along the ground." So God created mankind in His own image. In the image of God, He created them. Male and female, He created them. God blessed them and said to them, "Be fruitful and increase in number. Fill the earth and subdue it. Rule over the fish in the sea and the birds in the sky and over every living creature that moves on the ground." Then God said, "I give you every seed-bearing plant on the face of the whole earth and every tree that has fruit with seed in it. They'll be yours for food. And to all the beasts of the earth, and all the birds in the sky, and all the creatures that move along the ground, everything that has breath of life in it, I give every green plant for food." And it was so. God saw all that He had made, and it was very good. And there was evening, and there was morning, the sixth day. The Lord God took the man and put him in the Garden of Eden to work it and take care of it. And the Lord God commanded the man, "You are free to eat from any tree in the garden, but you must not eat from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. For when you eat from it, you will certainly die." In Colossians chapter 3, verse 23 to 25, which we read already, "Whatever you do, work at it with all your heart as working for the Lord, not for human masters, since you know that you will receive an inheritance from the Lord as a reward. It is the Lord Christ you are serving. Anyone who does wrong will be repaid for their wrongs, and there is no favoritism." This is the word of the Lord. So let's visit these verses fairly quickly. There are actually many other ones. So we're just doing a sampling. And one of the things I want to be very aware of is I don't want to just proof text these texts to support what we want to be saying. We want to be able to understand where they come from. And this is why we selected Genesis 1. What were we called? What were we created to do? Well, it simply says, God created mankind so that we might rule over the fish of the sea and the birds of the sky. and all other creatures. So ruling, being the first among all creation in terms of position, although we're the last in terms of chronology, is vital. Not only does he talk about being creating humanity to rule, it is primarily to reflect the image of God. And the question we want to ask simply is this: what does it mean for God to rule? Because if we look at humanity and how human cultures rule over others, it's not a pretty picture. Because our form of rulership is about domination and control and exploitation. How does Jesus, who is our King, rule? With love, with grace, with compassion, and yes, with power, direction, guidance, and nurturing. How did he live as the teacher of the 12 disciples and others who followed him? He washed their feet. So sometimes we might take this particular passage, and we have done so, just to exploit the resources of the earth and say that it's mine, it's ours. And so there is an environmental dimension to this in our caring for animals, in our caring for livestock, in our caring for the planet. It is vital that we understand what rulership means. And when we move to the second verse in Genesis, in chapter 2 that we are looking at, the passage, it says, "The Lord God took the man and put him in the Garden of Eden to work it and take care of it." This is a nice English translation of that understanding, but it does hold that together. Now, we are allowed to benefit from the work of our hands. And that's important to understand as well. And so they are allowed to eat of every tree. In fact, we actually don't start eating animals per se. There's no injunction to do that by God until Noah's time. If you read Genesis, we don't start, moving out of the fruits until Noah, if you're looking for it. But then at that point, we are given the animals as well as a part of our diet. But what the understanding is that because we bear the image of God, as He rules over us, we become stewards. And when we look at work, our work, we were created to do something good. We were created to help nurture, to cultivate, and not to simply take or hoard, which sometimes we do with what we get from work. And it is in the very image of God to work. For did he not work when he spoke all of creation into existence in the Genesis account? So understand this. Work is good. It is about stewardship. And it is about creativity and creating and making things ordered and better for all creation. But as you know, in the story of Genesis, things go terribly wrong. And our sin and resistance towards God, where we say, "You are no longer king, we are going to be kings for ourselves." Through the help of the serpent, or the deception of the serpent, who is identified later in Scripture as Satan, he says, "You are being kept from that one tree, because you will become like God. And God doesn't want that." And so, his temptation, simply put in a very oblique way, is that you can be God. You can be the supreme ruler. And we follow that unhappy suggestion, unhelpful suggestion. And from then on, our work became suffering as a part of the course of things. And so if you read the account of the fall of humanity, we do realize that God says, well, from here on in, there will be pain. And it's only by the sweat of your brow will you bring produce and fruit from the ground. So we understand what God's the original intent is and what we are created for in regards to work. But we also see that when we allow our work to be something else, or when we turn our hearts away from God, we become lords over all things instead of just the lords and stewards of the earth. We corrupt the earth. And we corrupt ourselves. The fall of man, or humanity as a whole, causes the corruption of all creation, is the understanding of Genesis. But we are not cursed forever, thank God. And as you might know, for although in a lot of ways the world works, using a different definition, use, and form, all the corrupt ways, all the exploitative ways, all the negative and hurtful ways, there are ways in which we can continue to work that bring glory to God and are good. And we, because we are part of the kingdom of God and the people of God, are in the process of recovery. And how can we recover if we don't know what we were originally created and called to do in our work? So these are things to explore. And one of the things is what we do now can be just as creative. That are as life-giving, no matter what it is. Whether you're a student, or a manager, or a teacher, or a physician, or someone who's in some form of service industry, that is still a place of blessing where you can be. So let me then go to the Colossians passage. Whatever you do, work at it with all your heart, whilst working for the Lord, not for human masters, since you know that you receive inheritance from the Lord as a reward. It is the Lord Christ you are serving. Now this passage, because I don't like putting things out of context, interestingly enough, is written to slaves in the times of Jesus, in the early centuries. Now, that slavery, as I always comment on, is a little bit different from the slavery of Africa that was perpetrated by colonial powers and, you know, in the United States and so on. Slavery was considered a form of work. That if you did not have the ability to support your family, that you would become indentured or become a slave to someone who would then care for you and your family. Of course, the other flip side of that agreement is that you then become the property. But the understanding still of the slave owner is that you are a steward of your slaves. And you are not meant to abuse them, although it did happen. Abuses did happen. And people were indeed born into slavery. But this was written to those who sometimes had no choice because of the way that their system worked. But where Jesus then is teaching, and where Paul is writing in regards to this, he says, whatever you do, even if you're working for someone who is Lord over you, is to work at it with all your heart. To do your best. And that should be always be your attitude. To always do your best as if for God, and not for human masters. Now, the equivalent here sometimes, you might feel fairly indentured to your place of work. Unless you're the boss. In which case, you should read the passages for the masters out of Colossians. But for those of us who labor under someone else, who have supervisors, we have to understand this as well. It might feel like slavery. Some of your work may be pretty, you know, not pleasant. But understand that the principle here is that no matter what it is that you do, ultimately, it should reflect God. I'll give you an example of this. Have you ever seen the show Undercover Boss? I love that show. Sometimes the bosses are kind of weird, you know, stuff like this. But sometimes they're really good. But whether they're good or bad is sometimes besides the point. What they are taught to do, it's about this relationship between masters and servants. Because you have a person who then is the master, the CEO of a company or something, some kind of franchise, and they go and visit the workers, and for the first time for some of them, they actually hear the stories of the people who work for them, and some of them are really hard stories. Really hard stories. But one of the things that impressed me the most is not the fact the CEO goes and hears those stories. Sometimes they meet people and they're really slouches and they gotta fire them. But in many cases, they find workers who are in a place of near poverty. And they're doing their absolute best and they're just shocked by how well these people do. In the sense of how much energy they put into what they do. Even though they're making so little. That if they're the cashier of a fast food joint, they are the best cashier they've ever seen. They know everything there is on the menu. They know how to treat the customers. And they put a lot of energy into it. But then afterwards in the back, they learn about how they're single parents and they're trying to make ends meet and they don't know how things are going to turn out. Or they talk about moving out of drug addiction and how they struggled. And those stories are incredible. And in some cases, the CEOs themselves are moved by these workers. And they help them. You see, what impresses me is not the fact that they get helped. I mean, that's the master's point of view. But because we're dealing with work, we're dealing with the people, well, on the ground, like ourselves. And even the CEO is at work. They should be blessing the people that they're supervising and that they're over. That, I think, is a wonderful way in which to live. But what impresses me is the fact that these people work so hard and that they are doing well. What Colossians 3:23-25 say. To work at their best. One of the things we have to ask ourselves when we do work is, am I doing the best that I can given my circumstances? Am I blessing the company I am in, the people, my clients, you know, my co-workers? That is what it means. And in doing so, we represent the kingdom of God. It is not merely the bringing of them into the kingdom. Because bringing them into the kingdom requires first and foremost that we live as if we are in the kingdom. And that they see the kingdom in us so that they would want to consider it. That too is a vocation and calling. So we're going to keep it simple with the principles. We'll explore it some more because we're going to be hitting some of the questions now given that foundation. Realize what we were created for. Well, actually, we're not created for work. We're created for God. Work was meant as a gift to us. Something that we do as we relate with God. Something creative. Something wonderful. Now, I'm not a green thumb. Most things I've planted have died. Miserable, horrible death. I don't know if plants have feelings, but it wasn't good. But what I do know is that there's one plant I'm able to take care of. And that's mainly because I like the way it smells. I have two jasmine plants. And I like the way they smell. And I'm learning to take pleasure in taking care of it. I have to make sure I don't overwater it in my zeal. I have to know how to prune it. And that means sometimes cutting it, right? And going, oh, I don't overhurt the plant. Because I don't know anything about gardening. I know it's supposed to be good for it. So I just go, okay, I'm trying to read up on the internet. Well, how am I supposed to prune this thing? So, you know, you try to prune it. But what happens over time is that there's pleasure from it. Yes, there's pleasure in gardening. for solace. And so over the years, I hate gardening. Because I don't like mowing the lawn and all that other stuff. But I've learned that it's something, A, I need to do because my neighbor starts mowing parts of my lawn. As a hint. So this summer, I, you know, took out the thing. Evan is helping me, so it's kind of like a family thing now. He mows the lawn. And I have to trim the trees. And, you know, you get all hot and sweaty. It's so uncomfortable. The sun's beating down on you. But then when you're done, you look at your garden and you go, there's two ways I react. One of them is, oh, it looks so good now. Oh, it's going to look so bad in a couple of weeks. But I know it's going to be there. And I'll be able to get at it again in a couple of weeks, which is about now. And it'll put me back to work again. And I'll engage in it again. And it's productive. Yes, I have to do the weeding, which comes part of the curse. But there's good things too. And there's things that come out of the ground that we don't necessarily expect. Eudora's grandmother planted a goji berry plant, as they call it now. They call it geiji in Cantonese. But she left it there, and you know Eudora's grandma has passed away now, and some of you have met her over the times that she did visit us. But this year, it's gone. You know, it's grown into this big bush with all these, you know, long things coming out of it. And it's got a whole bunch of berries. So there is fruit that is born, and so we just pick off little berries and eat them. You know, and so there is fruit that is born of the ground, and there's the joy in that creativity. That is what Genesis is about. That what you do can be creative. It's meant to be wonderful. It's meant to be productive. It gives us something to do while we are created to live with God. And we can thank God for these things. For it is He who controls the sun and the rain, but it is we who He's invited to cultivate the earth, to make it beautiful. And we do it, hopefully, to the best of our ability, even things that are difficult. So let me move on to a particular video I want to show you. So we're going to have to plug that thing in again. And I like this video because it engages us in terms of really thinking about what work might be and what it might feel like. So I'm just going to let you enjoy it as we continue. I hope you enjoyed that. Someone put a lot of effort into putting that together. But it's quite true to recognize the aspect of community. That we belong to each other here in the church, but we also belong to everyone we're involved with, family, friends, even strangers that we run into, clients, or bosses, all of these things. So I'd like to now engage with the questions and then therefore begin to answer some of our deeper questions about vocation. The first one is, what should my perspective be on vocation? And here's what I like to say. We have, in general, several vocations. The first is this. We are all called, all of us, all humanity is called to be in relationship with God. We are all called to be in relationship with God. So that is a fundamental, foundational understanding of vocation from a Christian and biblical perspective. Secondly, we are then called to love our neighbors and one another. Called to love our neighbors and one another in the church. So it's those people who are around us. Now I've taken the second commandment and the new commandment and mashed them together a little bit. So you could break it down to 2 and 3. But it's love God, love your neighbor, and love one another. And then there is a third part that we're called to by God specifically. And that is to make disciples. To invite people to the first and second parts of the vocation. That is our fundamental call. Now, beyond these foundational calls, the question then becomes, well, what about working? How do I know what I'm going to do from day to day and week to week, you know, in school, out of school, all this other stuff for work, the jobs that we look for? Well, it depends on the season of your life. As long as we apply the first three dimensions, we then have to creatively, I mean, God gives us a brain for a reason, and so I'm all for using it. It's a part of our creativity to discover what we are to do with what we have. For example, in a particular season, if you're a student, your vocation in that season, in terms of your activity, is that you're called to learn. That's why with our interns, you know, whether it was Diana in her time or Ben, who's, you know, on leave right now from it, but we're thinking about it, is that their role is to work in school, to learn. And even though they may help us out in the church when they're interning, I always press to them to do their best in their schoolwork first. Because that is what they're called to do in that season. If you're a teacher, you're called to teach. If you're a fund manager, you're called to manage. If you're retired, well, I don't know what that is yet. I'll have to ask my parents. Well, there's still relationships there, right? But that is also a season in which there is still work and there is vocation. And it's to discover, well, what is it now that we are meant to do? So whatever you're doing now, don't think of it as not your vocation. Whoever you're in contact with, whatever you're doing, find the creative dimensions in which you bring life, in which you bring the kingdom into your work. And that sometimes will change over time. For some people, they will hold a job for 50 years or more. Others will switch from geographically and perhaps even in the technical dimensions of what they do over time, many times. So whatever it is, it's about the faithfulness to the primary dimensions of calling, of loving God, loving your neighbor and those around you, and making disciples. How else did we want to explore this? This actually, the video that we saw is actually very helpful because it asks the question, what do we do with our talents, with our passions, with our... I would even go further to say, to discover your gifts, talents, passions, and resources. Now here's the thing, it may take time. So take the time and ask yourself what your gifts, talents, passions, and resources actually are. You have to know your limits as well as your abilities. And then it may also take time to connect that and discover the need that God is bringing to your attention. So in the video it says it's where your gifts, talents, and passions intersect with the world, the needs of the world. And that's a helpful definition of vocation. And that is where all those things, your gifts, talents, resources, passions, intersect with the world. You see, here's the key. If you don't have either one of those down, it becomes problematic. If you're only indulging your resources, passions, and things, it can be very selfish. Right? You're only doing life the way that you want to do it. And, well, the call to love your neighbor kind of goes out the window. The call to discipleship goes out the window. And frankly, probably the call to God also goes out the window. You cannot be just individualistic and self-oriented in a vocation. Not from a Christian perspective. So you always need to be engaging with the world and its need. But if you're always engaging with the world's needs and aren't considering your talents, your gifts, and so on, it doesn't work out either because it becomes very problematic what you want to do. So without self-understanding, engaging the world becomes difficult as well. Because you're not bringing to bear the way that you are designed. And sometimes the way I would look at this is it's important to note that your vocation is not the same. Your specific vocation. The three things I named are the general vocations. Your specific vocation. Your place of work, certainly, it being one of those things. Because we don't all work at the same place. Unless it's a company thing. It's kind of strange. But not only do we not work at the same place in terms of specific vocation, we may not have the same callings. Some of us may be called to support Compassion Canada, which is why our church talks about it, because some of us are there. Some of us are called to support ICC. Some of us are called to support Servants Anonymous. Some of us are meant to do certain different things. And here's something that's very important, that we do not judge others because their work or vocations are different from ours. So I don't stand here and after talking about compassion, anyone who does not support compassion is not following the will of God. I mean, this is ridiculous. Right? But I might sometimes get so tunnel visioned, or we might become so tunnel visioned in our passion, that we want everyone to believe and to support what we support. Be completely aware of the fact that God calls all of us in diversity. Now, it is not wrong. In fact, we encourage every single one of you that if you have a particular passion for a ministry or even a passion at work, to bring it here so that you can share, that we can pray. And we're excited about it together, like Project Somos, you know, the children, and we get to see the pictures and we know all about it. I think that's fantastic. Or getting people to come and share with us, whether SA holding, Global Wonders parties. That's what we want to do. We want to have a breadth of perspective. But understand that God calls each person into their place for a reason, both the specific work situation as well as the passions of the ministries that you participate in. So those are important things to note. Take time to discover who you are. Take time to engage with the world. Take time to understand that your vocation is not the same as everyone else's. And ensure that you do not judge others. Although you're certainly called to ask questions. And sometimes even to challenge. But to ask questions about those vocations. And to learn rather than to judge and accuse. So those are some foundational dimensions of your perspective on vocation. The general and specific. So the two specific ones being your work, as well as ministries that you want to participate in. I'm just going to move on. If you have questions, we're going to stop at the end, like we usually do. How do I discern my work and vocation? That's a good question. How do I... Okay, this is important. Work is not necessarily the same as vocation. Okay? Work is not necessarily the same as vocation. And don't mistake the two. Although your work can be a part of your vocation, it's not necessarily so in fulfilling both the general and specific dimensions. Why do I say this? Some people work in order to survive, and not necessarily due to a divine calling. So their specific vocation might not be fulfilled. They're not called to break rocks because God wants rocks to be broken. I don't know, maybe. But here's the thing. When I say that you don't mistake your work for vocation, what I'm specifically talking about is your specific calling or specific vocation. You know what I'm saying? Because in any work, you can still love God. Well, almost any. Well, we'll get to that question. You can still love God, you can still love your neighbor, and you can still call others into life with God. So that doesn't change no matter what you do, mostly. But understand that sometimes some of us and some of our brothers and sisters around the world have to do work that is not necessarily fulfilling a specific calling for that season in a specific way. So that's just a caveat in regards to discernment. But here's the thing. Whatever you do, therefore, should still align with the fundamental vocations, the basic vocations, the general vocations of the Christian life. A good approach to work and vocation is to discern how your gifts, talents, passions, and resources coincide with the needs of the world. In other words, be a good steward of what you have and who you are holistically, and apply it to the love of God and love of others, if you can. It may take time and effort, as we said, to discover your talents, passions, gifts, resources, but take the time to do it. So that's how we want to discern, understanding those dimensions. So it's basically repetitive of what I've already covered in the first question. How do I fulfill, fight, and hope for my vocation and work without completely identifying myself through the position, title, performance I have? Okay, one sentence will do this, but I'll elaborate. But the one sentence is this. You are not what you do. You are not what you do. And what I mean by that is, computer tech or whatever it is that's put on your title. You do what you do for a reason. But your value of yourself is not in what you do, your position, your title, or your performance. Do what you do because it's your gift, talent, passion, resources, and best applied for the good of others. But understand who you are outside of what we call your occupation. One of the most helpful things that I got to do was go on sabbatical. One of the reasons that I go on sabbatical, and I wrote this up before I left, is that I need to know who I am outside of being a pastor. I'm a pastor almost 24/7 all the time. But if I'm not a pastor, what am I? Or who am I? I'm still called towards God. Still called to love my neighbor. Still called to make disciples. Even if I'm not a pastor. It's just that being a minister allows a lot of these things actually to coincide. But even outside the church, I need to know who I am. So my position allows me to be a little more meshed. And that's why sabbatical is helpful. To step away and still honor God and understand my identity. That even if I'm not a pastor, even if I'm not doing what I do, I'm still going to be who I am. And hopefully by the grace of God, you know, when I'm up here and doing the pastorly type stuff, that you actually get more of who I am than my position, title, and whatever. Because actually that's hopefully what you're getting. You get the real Ted and not some put-on minister. So that's important to note. One other thing I would say then is for you, this is what vacations or even retirement is about. Take sabbaticals. Take your vacations. And yes, eventually retire. Well, why? Because even though you may take breaks from forms of work, you never break away from your vocation. You always have a vocation. No matter what state of life you're in. And if you allow your work to define you, and this happens, you know, we know it does, that when someone retires, sometimes their life ends. Literally. We were created to do something. Hopefully something lovely. Something wonderful. We are called to be creative. And that does not end. Even when we stop our, you know, 9 to 5 or whatever it is that we do. There is still life to be lived. And if you identify only with your work, it may indeed consume you. So be careful of that. So when we go here, how do I fulfill, fight, and hope for my vocation and work without completely identifying myself? Well, it's sort of the things that we've already talked about applying. Do your best in what you do. Engage it. Love it. Let it be part of your talents, gifts, passions. You know, do the best that you can in those areas. But understand that in the end of all things, God does not ask you, you know, I say don't imagine, what did you do? You know, what was your work? That's probably not what he asked. So understand that. Here's an interesting question. What are wrong ways to make money? Well, let me make it pretty simple. Lying, stealing, cheating, basically not being in right relationship with other people already goes into that. Also, beyond those very simple injunctions, please try to remain, or do remain, within legal bounds as a supplemental guide to those other ones. Remain within legal grounds. You know, if the law in fact is just, but there's certain consequences for not following that secondary line of understanding. So basically, you're just staying within your primary vocations. Love of neighbor. Don't rip them off. That's the key. Now, of course, it's a little more subtle than that, depending on what you're doing, but how you treat people. You need them to apply wisdom. Because what if you're in a position where there is a bad worker, and you have to, and your job is to fire them? Well, that becomes a little more complex. But you remember, you work within a system of people, and you work within the parameters sometimes that you're given. And I understand that sometimes that is well within being a good worker. Yes. It's very indirect.
It's indirect, that's right, it's not obvious.
Yes.
But, you know, that's
Absolutely. Absolutely. So if what we do then participates somehow in that, then we need to think twice. So ethical dimensions do come into aspects even of investments, and they come into what we do in our personal lives. When we hit the area of sex, for example, our participation in pornography can be a problem, not only for ourselves spiritually and everything else, but understand there's a particular industry. Prostitution is one of those industries. We had a very interesting conversation once in our seminary where Dr. Paul Stevens, who speaks a lot about work and vocation, that's his thing, mentioned one time that there's a few vocations that you don't want to, that Christian probably cannot participate in. Hitman? And the sex trade. You know, and things like slavery. You know, those are pretty obvious. You know, being a slave trader is not a good Christian thing to do. But it was interesting because then once we stepped out, one of the other students said, you know, I heard them complaining, is, when are you talking about prostitution not being a... I mean, what? And so we had this conversation and we sat down and said, well, what do you mean? Well, how come you're upset by saying, when he says, you know, being a participant in the sex trade? He said, well, what if you have to? It's like, well, certainly isn't within God's purview. So I still disagree with them, obviously, because it is self-destructive. And you do have to remove people from those situations. But that is still, you know, not a loving place to be. So yes, those are pretty general, like slave trading and prostitution and killing people for money. I think it's obvious, but you're also right. There's subtle ways in which that happens if we support certain companies and so on. Yes?
I had a friend who worked for a mining company, and I think actually considered ethical implications. He was an engineer, and then he was studying for part time. He was making, obviously, like, good money, but he was growing more and more trouble. I think there was some lawsuits that were going on in other parts of the world. So he wasn't directly involved. He wasn't, you know, he wasn't responsible for any of that, but I think his conscience spoke. And I think as he learned about the implications or the impact that the organization
so he left the position. That's a good point. It also depends on what position you're in within certain companies, if that's where you're in. If you end up being a CEO or someone who can make change within the system of an organization, it's a long road up, I'm telling you. But if that is what you're called to, and it's within your ability to do so, then do what is good to reform, if it's possible. That's a good point. That's a great illustration.
I think he thought about, you know, what change he can actually do.
Yeah, and sometimes you're not in that place.
Yeah.
You need something really high up to, you know, say, yeah, we're going to stop doing this in, you know, Ecuador or whatever. Yeah, absolutely. So give that some thought. It depends on where you are and what you're doing. And you know, some of us, maybe, you know, if we're younger, sometimes we're not in a position where we're higher up. And there's a reason why sometimes we go through the ranks. And it's not a bad thing. We talked about this last week about climbing the corporate ladder or whatever ladder there is. Well, if you're given more power, and we're going to talk about that in next year, but when you're given more power, you are meant to use it for good. I mean, it's not Spider-Man, right? But it's also biblical. For those whom much is given, much is also asked. So depending where we are, it comes into play. Good discussion. So, yes, there are wrong ways to make money. And so we will struggle over it ethically, and I'm glad that, you know, that example is one. Think about what you're doing and why. And sometimes challenge and see if there's something you can do within. If not, understand. And sometimes we are given opportunities where we do move up in a a company, like I said, for a reason. Esther's always a great example of that, jumping to the top, you know, becoming the queen. But for what reason? Hers is a very vocational thing where the needs of a lot of people, her own people, crossed with the position that she was in. And she took her risks to do what was right, fulfill the primary callings. Passive income, is that okay? Well, for those who don't know what it is, I had to look this up too a little bit because I don't use this term on a daily basis. It's money that's made or given without constant activity and participation. Okay, rental income can fall into this category if you're not managing the site yourself. It's just money that will come in without your direct participation. So certain investment dividends fall into the category of passive. Pensions can fall into this category because you're not your... So anything you don't do from a daily basis to maintain an income is known as active income, and then that's passive. This is a layman's understanding, right? But that's generally what it is, and that's part of what the question is towards. Continuous income of some form that you're not actively having to deal with on a regular daily basis. So the question is it okay? The answer to that question is yes. It is totally okay. But there are dangers to it. You know, if you're a trust fund kid or something like this, you have to be careful not to become a wastrel, become lazy, self-indulgent. There are dangers of some extreme forms of merely living off passive income. So we still want to engage the creative dimensions. And we still are engaged and should be engaged with the primary calls of the kingdom. To love God, to love our neighbors, and so on and so forth. Even those who are not Christians have sometimes found these as realities. You know, as people like Bill Gates or Warren Buffett wander around the planet trying to encourage people to be more giving, more generous in their lives. Well, they certainly have the ability. But what they're calling usually people who may have a lot of passive income. You may or may not fall into some of these categories. But do know that intrinsically, passive income is not necessarily wrong. You know? But what it is just be aware. And continue to be creative and engage with the kingdom. Last one in this category. I thought there'd be more. But when does looking for tax savings cross the line from becoming tax evasion? I actually looked this up too. Very technical stuff sometimes. But I'm going to try to keep it as simple as possible for my brain to understand. There are two types of tax categories. One is called tax avoidance. The other one is tax evasion. Okay, so this is asking about tax evasion and where you want to see the light. So let me tell you what tax avoidance is. Tax avoidance or tax shelters include things like RRSPs, incorporation, and deferments. For example, RRSPs are a deferment of sorts because you pay into this the RRSP fund or whatever it is you got. And they don't tax you on it until you access that money, which is hopefully when you're retired, and therefore are in the lower tax bracket. So your tax avoidance, it's about avoiding higher tax rates. Does that make sense? Yeah? Okay. Some of us may actually participate in some of these tax-sheltered, avoidance things. And the main thing is that they should be using legal means. Legal registered means recognized by the government and you're not dodging things. And this is what tax evasion is. And tax evasion is illegal. Tax evasion in its simplest form can get complicated. That's why you get accountants. But in the simplest form, it's not reporting your total income. That's it. From the government's point of view, they'll let you shelter, they'll let you defer. You know, you pensions, you can incorporate things to sort of get lower tax, you know, brackets. But if you are not reporting what you make, that is outright tax evasion and is in fact, illegal. So when the tax, looking for tax savings cross the line, become tax evasion, tax savings is not an issue at all. It's when you start lying. So that goes back to the fundamentals. What can't you do? Well, you can't lie. Well, you shouldn't lie. Becomes one of the simple understandings. So one of the current controversies, and just to throw this into the mix a little bit, is that in our country, Canada, the government has made a legal requirement recently, and recently being a number of years, though relative, so for Canadians to report not only domestic, but foreign income. That's a tough one, especially for those of us who are closer to the immigrant world. And now, where it used to be not considered tax evasion, they have made explicitly so. Now, so these become moral questions. Are we going to report these things now? And I think those probably require more extended conversation. But I understand it's not as black and white, but there are certain things that are. And understand that from the government's point of view, legal, if you lie about how much you make, that's a problem. But you are allowed to find ways in which you lower your bracket with legal means that are recognized by the government and sometimes encouraged. Okay. Any questions? I mean, there's people in here that know a lot more about these things than I do, probably. But these are just the general things we had to dig up and sort out. Yes, Diana.
I grew up in the thinking that, taxes are evil, you feel the government's trying to take your money. Because that's the general...
That's right. No one likes to be taxed.
From society, we get that from the states as well. Probably not until moving here, I realized, and this is from an idea about where our taxes go to. And it's actually a form of generosity.
Yeah.
And helping others. Everything costs money. Build your roads, your infrastructure. As an engineer, there's a lot of things that our money goes to and can help with the general public.
This community center.
Exactly.
This is your tax dollar.
Kind of attitude around of trying to we need to save as much money as we can and avoid paying taxes. Well, actually, you're benefiting from those taxes. And also, you're helping others. People who don't have their income, then they can have an education,
have healthcare.
That's
right. So I think it was a change of attitude,
and be like, okay, it's
all right
if I don't save every last penny, right, from the government. Because it's actually a way of being generous.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that's a great, thank you for saying that, Diana, because taxes are meant for the good of society. So they actually fulfill parts of the vocational, the primary vocation of loving others. And I think where it is that you then, it is all meshed together, because then you'd hope that those who are in power, in the government, or municipal or provincial or federal, that if they are applying, you hope they will, but if you find yourself as a civil servant of one form or the other, then you are applying the same principles. Now, we do know corruption exists, a little bit less so perhaps in Canada to certain degrees. But understand that if you're in those positions, there are certain challenges if you're in another country. But the hope is that our civil servants are, and if we find ourselves in as believers, that we'll operate with the same, honest, hardworking principles. And it's very disheartening, especially from the tax perspective, when you see senators blowing money out the window. That's very disheartening. And that only makes the public angry. And so that makes us view taxes in a particular way. But know that not everyone is like that. And know that there are people, even the comment that this community center, we would never be able to afford having this kind of facility outside of the community and the taxes that are paid. So, tax avoidance, I would call it tax reduction. You know, it's not nothing wrong with reducing your tax burden, but understand that taxes are not necessarily evil or bad. They are paid for a reason. And hopefully the government has decent policies on it. Any other questions? That's a great comment. Yes, Victor.
This is a little bit of a thing, but I sometimes muse and wonder whether or not it's been a complete, whether it's a help or a hindrance that our Western society has made the whole idea of finding a job such a blank slate.
So what do you mean?
Well, what I mean by is that it's, you know, you have people in their teens, in their 20s, really, like, it's like the choices are not narrow. The choices seem endless and diverse. And
yes.
Where do you begin? Where do you start? The whole field of counseling, therefore, has developed to help people navigate through this business. But then, in the pursuit of true freedom, you created a situation that is. It can be difficult to navigate. And then there are those, of course, who embrace this difficulty and rise to it and become, you know. And then there are those who just get slaughtered by the whole process, you know, emotionally. And
the job hunting process, and it's just so frustrating.
And all that kind of stuff. And there are actually parallels, I think, also to the whole life partner pursuit as well.
Okay.
You have to decide, let's say, where your life partner is really chosen for you, and then as opposed to here where you expect, you know, 18-year-old, like, you'll have that maturity and actually be able to pursue it, all those things. Mm-hmm. So, in some ways, you know, the maturity that you possess, say, as an 18 or 19 or 20-year-old, as you're pursuing all these life career goals, and so on and so forth, sometimes it's for those who are, quote unquote, successful or who are become established. It's not. It's for the grace of God. It's by some accident, by something that the whole situation can kind of perceive. But I have this tension in my heart sometimes when I look to that generation and I see this. Yes, there's a whole body of people who seem to have embraced the challenge and the difficulty and have come out stronger and more character and more.
The wimpy generation.
Yeah.
to deploy the euphemism.
Good jobs. and then they
as they mature,
they get the other
stuff. Okay. That's an interesting comment. So it is about the fact that it caused a lot of stress to find a job and so on. And
if the message to them is that you will find that one job that's going to intersect all those things.
Yeah.
All those things are going to intersect 100%.
That's right.
And if you don't find that thing that intersects all your heart, your talents, your passions, plus the world needs, keep on looking.
That's a very good point. I would agree. And that's why I make the comment that work is not necessarily the same as vocation. And I think your comment is actually very helpful. You have to realize that some people need to simply work, period. And you don't necessarily have the options of aligning all your talents, as you said, talents, passions, you know, resources, whatever. And there is merit. You know, and that's why I say, you know, watching Undercover Boss is so helpful. Not everyone wants to work at, you know, Kentucky Fried Chicken as the fry person. Okay? How is that a vocational? How does that meet their talents and passions and needs? Well, it probably doesn't. Maybe they want to make music instead, or, you know, like rap or something. But they don't have the resources. But what they can do is they can still meet their primary vocation. And so I think you're absolutely right. We have the options in our particular culture and society, and we are actually encouraged to find what fits us instead of just taking whatever job that is available sometimes. And yeah, maybe it, you know, we smell like at the fryer when we go home and like we, you know.
Yeah, things like dentistry, anxious-free zone, living at home, parents, stuff like that can continue to buffer this whole pursuit.
Sometimes affluence only generates, you know, more problems. And because what happens is that so the passive income thing comes into play. Like if you're naming those things, the interest rate loans, family, and so on, is that you can create a generation of people who don't work. And one of the things that we know that when we study people who win lotteries, or people who come from very wealthy families, is that they can lose their money very quickly if they become wastrels. So that's a term we don't use every day, wastrel. But we can become wastrels. And we, instead of saying, you know, man, you know, I'm just gonna do what I need to get done. Yeah. And that's a deep challenge. And that's where we need to talk with other people. And that's what community is for and about. And you name something like marriage, where it used to be, you know, in certain cultures, all set. Like, you already know when at 5 years old who your spouse is going to be when you're like 12 or something, right? Something crazy. We don't do that now. But in my marriage counseling and study of it historically, instead of allowing your community, your parents, those who might be wiser, sometimes they're not, to choose your spouse for you, to help you to choose your spouse, because they still, in all these arranged marriage situations, you still get the choice. It's just that people present certain people to you who are a better option. Instead of that, because we've thrown that out the window with a sexual revolution and other cultural things that happen, we now have to choose our own spouse. And we can be very ill-equipped to do so. So what's happening now is because we arrange our own marriage, we have tools like eHarmony and stuff like this. Yeah, but what happens is that, yeah, ChristianSingle.com. Or Mingle, ChristianSingle, sorry. But they've got a whole list and they break things down. So it's like a new form of trying to pick the right person. Algorithms. Now we use computer. Now instead of family and people we know, we get robots to pick our spouse for us. So, I mean, it's just the way it's happened. But the same thing with work. There was a time when you were going to do exactly what your parents did. That's it. There is no upward mobility. Whatever your dad does, if you're a man or a boy, that's what you do. If you're a girl, unfortunately your options are even worse. Almost non-existent in certain cultures. And still is. But now in our culture, with the way it's evolved, we now get to also choose our own job. And that's what we're facing. And that instead of having the wisdom of others around us, we almost see it as a restriction. And so we have to learn, for those of us who are younger, perhaps, to learn to listen. And these are the right voices, of course. You know, sometimes mom and dad can be a little bit, you know, hard. But if there is a good community in which people can then ask and encourage you and say, what are your talents? That's why I said it takes time to figure these things out. But thank you for the comment. It is a little more difficult than just pulling a job out of a hat. But it's worthwhile our consideration and conversation with each other. Any other thoughts, comments, questions? Our time is dwindled. Let me ask Jess then to take a moment and let me pray for us. And I'll ask Diane.